I want you to get together.
Hello, everyone. How are we all doing? It's Friday morning. I've got a bit of time to myself, and I just want to basically have a bit of a stream of consciousness, like I usually tend to do. And I've been thinking a lot about morality, good and evil, and our place in the world. And someone did send me an interesting email asking the question of, like, well, if we're ignorant as people and have a very limited perception of time and you know, we are fallen in nature and the consequences for that are death and in turn hell, doesn't it seem a bit harsh if we're coming at it from like an ignorant point of view that we would go to hell as a punishment for not knowing that we were doing wrong because of the moralities that are around us, you know, and how many systems have arisen throughout human history in different cultures of what's right and wrong? How are we supposed to know as people who can't help being born into certain traditions and cultures know exactly what is the right thing to do? And is there any mercy in this, basically? Or can we try and make sense of this situation of, you know, punishment for sin, in a sense? And my initial response to him was something cursory, very cursory. And it was... And I started riffing on this idea that, well, is mankind as innocent as we think we are when it comes to this type of thing? Are we as dumb and as ignorant as it seems about our choices to do bad things? Now, thankfully, the sacrifice of Jesus Christ frees us from this issue in a big way, and all our sins are forgiven through him. And it's not our works of doing lots of good things to balance the bad things that are going to solve that issue. It's simply his sacrifice is sufficient for that, and there are no extra steps necessary to receive salvation and avoid this tricky issue of hell, which again is a heavily contested, debated thing about what hell even is and how you would define hell. And I think even within Christianity, this is a highly contentious issue for the people who label themselves as such, to try and explain to the outsider why they're worthy of eternal punishment, you know. And the arguments you tend to get are what I just mentioned there, aren't they? You know, well, what kind of cruel God would allow that? If it's not our fault because we were tricked by the serpent, then why X, you know, why punishment? It's not, it just doesn't seem like a loving God would do such a thing. And like I said, I've thought about these things, and I don't have definitive answers. I really don't. Okay, and look, this is so think of Paul right now with no degree of certainty, not so saith the Lord. You know, this is just me riffing on the idea and kind of thinking about it. And I want to preface now, immediately, as I just did, this is not me claiming a different gospel and that there should be a works-based salvation or anything of the sort. I'm not saying that. The question we're talking about right now is, well, what is good and what is evil and what is morality and how can we balance the two or figure out what's going on here and make good choices, you know, which can only benefit us in the physical world while we're here. But if you're covered by the blood of Jesus Christ, then it's not really a question of your salvation, you know. But to get people to accept the free gift of salvation, I feel like I can empathize. It seems like for them, it comes with this weight of accepting a cruel God who wants to punish them. And how do we bridge this for people? So I'm going to try here. I'm going to do what I can to have this hard conversation, because it is a hard conversation, and try and explain all the things I've kind of learned over the years about morality and how, where we can place ourselves within it, and how basically I feel like a lot of people have this view of a cruel God punishing us for just being dumb, you know, and not knowing any better is a bit of a cop-out. I personally feel like it is. I think we do know better. And I think the law is written on our hearts. I think we know when we sin and when we miss the mark as unbelievers before we even find Christ. I think that knowing of evil, the feeling of evil, and we know when we've been evil too, is a huge indicator that there is also good and that morality is not subjective. And subjectivism, I suppose, is the overarching theme of the zeitgeist of humanity into the late 20th to 21st century. You know, like, morality is up to you to decide what is and isn't good or bad. and different cultures and civilizations have varying degrees of opinion on what is and isn't good. What's good to one civilization may be considered evil to another, and vice versa. Therefore, how can we truly know what is good and what is evil? And again, big questions, big problems. I think, from what I can gather, that there is an objective good and there is an objective evil. And the objective good is God, and he is righteous and a fair judge. And he is the only one who can judge where somebody's heart is, where their mind is, where they actually are as a soul, where they stand. And it's up to God to make that judgment in the end. And that's kind of the whole message of Christianity, you know. Who are we to make those judgments? Where were we when we laid the foundation of the earth? You know, when he was like, where were we? Where were we when he laid the foundation of the earth? You know, what do we actually know in terms of what is good and what's evil? Well, thankfully, through Christ, who came to fulfill that law, we now have a way back to him. And it's through his perfect life and sacrifice, living a lawful, sin-free life, that we can be seen as spotless before God, which is a wonderful good news concept. But also, we're told to try and follow in the way of Christ and be like Christ as much as we are capable of, knowing that we will fall short, but get back up and carry on. You will be forgiven. And I think the radical act in this world of being good, or doing things which you know to be right, or at least not doing things you know to be bad, at least, is a radical act in this world. I think we all know it when we experience it. You know when you experience evil, for example. And you know when you've done something good, or somebody has done good to you. You know these things instinctually. They're in you, they're in us, they're in the very core of our being, this morality of understanding, you know, what is good and what is bad individually. We do know this, and I think those are an objective morality. Now, this is where the issue comes. I think this is where the Western world has a problem here. And I think this is where most religions have had issues. This is where the Pharisees and the Sadducees had issues too, you know, when Christ was walking around basically being upright and moral. And that they had their own standards, which the law of man had created, which he was not upholding to. He was breaking laws which they themselves had created, which they believed were the right moral framework for how to live. And because we live in a relatively godless world today in the West, secularism has taken over the church and religious ideals. There's a separation of church and state. We've heard this phrase before, you know, and it's the idea that religious beliefs have no footing in societal order. It's kind of, we leave the government to make those rules and standards and laws, and religion should not be involved in any of that, or morality should not be involved in any of that. But the problem is, you cannot separate morality from law. So when governments create laws, they are setting moral standards, okay? And because a lot of people don't have a God, or don't think about God, or have not fostered or attempted to make a relationship with the Creator or the Father, they don't actually know or have any moral basis written out for them in black and white, shall we say, which the governmental law gives to them. It gives them something tangible that they can go off of. I think a lot of people have chosen to default to the man-made laws of the government. So government is God, essentially. And it frees them, the benefits of this for them in their mind, is it frees them from having to think about morality and choices. What is moral is whatever the government tells me is moral. So that's changing all the time. The laws are always changing, and the standards, the goalposts are always shifting. But we're seeing the symptoms of this mindset today in a big way, aren't we? We're seeing the rise of these socialist, social Marxist, leftist types, which everyone's all talking about these days is a big buzzword. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't play the left-right game. I don't associate with the right just because I'm talking about the left right now. You know, it's not like this. But right now, we can see that a certain type of person has arisen who basically is a full governmental law conformist. And they have the full weight of the law of man behind them. At least they have for the past decade or two, when trying to implement these standards onto everybody else. you know, you didn't use the right pronouns, go to jail, that type of thing. The government says so. The government tells me you're practically Hitler if you don't agree with the Green Party initiative or the 2030 initiative or, you know, whatever progressive, you know what I mean, progressive ideology is forced upon the civilization. Like, and that's because, well, the law says it's right. The law is telling me that this is good and I'm a good person because I follow the rules laid out for me by man. And I do think there's a level of choice involved with that. I think people are choosing to abdicate their responsibility to make real moral choices based on the objective morality and law of God to the government to tell them what is and isn't good instead. And then they go on. And I want to make the distinction here. The law of God isn't like a, you know, we had the Ten Commandments at one point and the Levitical law prior to that, but the new covenant is, you know, all things are lawful, but not everything is profitable. So you're free from the burden of the law thanks to the sacrifice of Christ, but that doesn't mean you don't know morality. You don't know what the law is. It's written on our hearts and we have what's called a conscience. And this isn't a tangible set of rules that you can bring up in a court necessarily, unless you're talking about the spiritual court of heaven, you know, which is kind of how it's laid out in a sense, with God as the judge at the top and, you know, our lawyer is Jesus when we're put on the podium. It's that kind of thing. But thankfully, Jesus can cover us and the Father will only see his Son as we are in front of him. Like, because as we are, it's terrible. We always fall short. We always make mistakes. Our nature is to be sinful in our corrupt fallen states. And he is forgiving of that. But because he is also just, then in a way, he has to punish us for the sins we have committed. Do you understand? Like, justice is only relevant when it's served. You know, like, it's only a concept if you believe there is a moral good or bad. Now, in civilization, governmental civilizations, separate from God, well, they make judgments, don't they? And they put people in prison or even execute people based on their versions of morality. What you did was wrong by our standards and is punishable by death. And in some cases, you know, we as fallen people look upon the rapists and the pedophiles and the murderers and we say, you know, maybe they got what's coming to them. You know, they got justice was served. You know, we have this idea and this understanding. And it's okay when we do it, isn't it, as people sometimes, though people would argue, and there's debates about the relevancy of the death penalty, don't get me wrong, but most people feel a righteous indignation to hang the traitors, you know, or like, you know, say, you killed somebody, eye for an eye, we take your life. Like, we consider this is man-made justice, you know. So when God above us applies his sense of justice, which, by the way, can only be perfect because he is the creator of all things. There is no higher morality than the creator of morality to begin with, you know, and even a concept of good and or evil. It's kind of, well, if he was to make a righteous judgment, then we all fall drastically short and we all do technically deserve punishment for what we've done and what we do on a daily basis. We are always breaking the law as the standards of God. We are always idolizing false gods. We are always sacrificing into the wrong gods in many ways. We are always killing in our own ways too. And as a collective, we are destroying wildlife and animals in the world. we do bad things and we are very self-serving. We are myopic in our worldview. We're very narrow-minded. And we are obstinate and we do tend to rebel quite regularly. The entire Old Testament is a story of a people he chose and set aside who were just continuously rebelling and would not kept failing to live up to the standards of morality, of good, of goodness. It just seems to be not in our nature. Every one of us is corrupt and fallen. Not one of us is good and not one of us could do it except when Christ came. So this is obviously, I know for the non-believers out there, this sounds like nonsense, but I'm not trying to convert you today. I'm just trying to relay to you kind of the philosophical ethics behind how Christians see it all, you know. But I again, I can't convince you of this. It's just food for thought, so take this for what it is. Okay, so morality, like I said, God is a divine judge. And he can judge what is and isn't right. And would we want him to be a fair judge to those who have committed egregious sins? Okay. You would, wouldn't you? You would feel like, well, you know, I'll let God deal with you. And a lot of Christians do leave it to that, you know. But God doesn't want any sinner, it doesn't matter how far gone you are, what you've done, to perish. And this is where we get into, well, what is hell? So we have this idea that, you know, hell is reserved for the false prophets, the Antichrist, the false prophet, and Satan, the devil, the dragon. And it seems like, you know, they'll be there forever and ever and ever. And people say, well, those who followed Satan will be dragged to hell with him, is kind of the Christian ethos behind this. And there's very a Dante's Inferno style of hell, which people have created, which is it took a lot of creative liberties when that was made, you know. But I think the concept of distance from God is what hell is primarily talking about. Those who have chosen to distance themselves from God, the further away you are, the more akin to a state of hell you are, because there is no good without God. So you are only going further into perpetual darkness and evil. And I think that concept of hell may alleviate it a little bit and maybe in some way explain how we do choose to go there. Like, if God has offered a way back to him and it's been made abundantly clear and shouted from the mountains to all people endlessly for decades and centuries and millennia, and people still go, no, I'm going to go this way further away from you. What point do we give them the responsibility, the choice to them? Are we always supposed to say, no, well, they don't know any better? I don't think we can keep doing that. There comes a point where they do know better because of what I said earlier, the law is written on our hearts. We know the law. We know it. We know when we are committing evil. We know good from evil. This is kind of the issue with the apple. We do know good and evil because we bit of the apple of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We know the difference. There is no excuse now. You know, we really do know the difference. And I think people are lying to themselves when they say, well, I didn't know any better. It's kind of, I don't think ignorance of the law is going to be an excuse. Anyway, it won't really hold up in court. It doesn't even hold up in our courts. If you break the law, you get punished whether you knew you were doing it or not. You know? But I think that's a myth that people don't really know. I think they do know. Now, there's room here, a caveat, before people go off on me and start saying, well, what about X, Y, and Z? I'll discuss X, Y, and Z. Yeah, so, you know, severely mentally disabled people or children or people who have an inability to reason because of mental incapacity in some way, I think God, as a righteous divine judge, is not condemning those people who quite literally cannot have the capacity to know any better to be punished for that. I don't think he punishes them for that. I think they're safe. I think the innocents, the truly innocent, are safe. Okay? And that's only what a righteous divine judge would do. But we're not talking about them, are we? We're talking about you and me, the people who were not wholly innocent. Now, the gospel message is good news for a reason. You know, we as sinners, as people who deserve to be separated from God, because we have done nothing but distance ourselves and reject him our entire life. And again, that comes in varying forms. There's varying levels of sin, but no sin is greater than the other in that respect. They all condemn you. So there's no point in judging and say, well, I sinned less than you sinned. Well, you all still sinned. It doesn't matter, you know. So that argument's out the window already. There's no levels of worse sin over others and worse punishments for others. The punishment is final. You're separate from God, which is separate from goodness, which can only be an eternity of bad, you know. So that's hell, isn't it? As traditionally understood. I think that divine judgment is made and we deserve it. And we all know we're continuously falling short, but through his son's sacrifice, we don't have to end up there. We have now even another option given to us, which is accept the free gift of salvation. It's a free gift. And that is exactly what a divine, loving God would do for a population who is claiming ignorance all the time. Like, So I think like this argument that, well, he's a cruel God who wants to send me to hell. No, he doesn't. He's a just and righteous judge who doesn't want you to burn in hell and has given you a way to make sure that doesn't happen. There's nothing cruel about that whatsoever. That's actually mercy. And it's mercy we don't deserve, but he gave it to us anyway. And this is why there's the analogy of the Father, God as the Father. You know, because as a father myself, and I'm sure parents out there will understand this, the love you have for your sons and your daughters, your children, is a mirror, a microcosm of that divine love that God has for his creation. And we feel a fraction of it here on earth when we have children. And that, even that minute mirrored fraction of the image of God's love for his creation and our love for our children is so intense and final and unconditional. And there are bad parents in this world, don't get me wrong. There are bad parents who have failed their children in many ways. And I'm sorry for those people who have experienced that. I'm not trying to trigger you in any way when saying these things. Because we're fallen, corrupt, horrible, nasty creatures who deserve hell, like I mentioned earlier, you know. So this happens. We have humans falling short drastically and failing to live up to the basic standards of being a parent, for example. But for those parents who do love their children, they understand it's this uncontrollable need and want for the best for your children. And the children, being the rebellious, back-talking, obstinate little things that they are, being man, being people, you know, being corrupt humans like the rest of us, they tend to grow up and get worse and rebellious and turn away from their parents and want to run away from them. And again, is that not just a macrocosm of the whole of what humanity is doing with the divine creator? We rebel, we run away, and we go and roll around in the pigs and squander our inheritance. But we have the story, don't we, of the prodigal child, the prodigal son, who comes back to the father after realizing what he's done. And the father doesn't berate him. He doesn't shout. He doesn't judge. He doesn't condemn and say, turn from me or leave, or he doesn't do any of that. The father, with open arms, welcomes his son back and puts on a feast and gives him everything he deserved from the very beginning that he wanted for him. His kingdom, his inheritance. And that's exactly how I would treat my child if both of them went out there and rebelled and went against me and hated me and went to live in the world and did the rest of it. If they came back, I wouldn't judge them. I wouldn't berate them for it. I wouldn't attack them for it. I would cry with joy that they came back. And I would love them, hold them, and be there for them and guide them as best I can. But I wouldn't reject them if they chose to come back from that sin. And I believe the Father of all creation has the same emotion and feeling and desire for us, his children. He's not cruel and vindictive and evil. He's just, good, and righteous. We are vindictive, cruel, fallen, and evil, and out for ourselves and narcissistic and self-centered. And we think we know better, and we're out there creating our own moralities and our own rules, subjectively to our own hearts, which are corrupt and wicked, thinking we know better than the creator of all things. And we fall short because of this too, and we kill, steal, maim, destroy, and make hell on earth as a result. And God sees us do this. And what do we deserve because of those actions, because of what's happening collectively? We deserve righteous, divine punishment for the destruction and havoc we've caused. But rather than doing that, he sees us, he sees our flaws and all our problems, and he sees his children. So he sent a way for us to get back to him. He created a bridge, he created a way for us, the way, the truth, and the life, which is through his son, Jesus Christ. And that is becoming like Christ, or achieving Christ consciousness, or anything like that, or ascending to the right levels of consciousness through works and means and the right mantras and sigils and signs and potions and magic or anything like that. It's simply accept that he did that for you and the door will be opened and you can go. That is good news. That is fantastic. That is incredible. That is a sign that of the love God has for his children. So if you haven't already accepted Jesus Christ into your life and into your heart and accepted the free gift of salvation and given all your sins and burdens and stresses to him today, I hope you do today. I do. Again, I'm not trying to convert you, but I can't help but spread the truth and the gospel, because it is something that we all need to hear, and it is simple and it doesn't have to be complicated. I'm not selling you churchianity here. I'm just selling you the simple way to salvation. That's it. You don't need anything else. There are no other steps to be taken. So when it comes to morality, what is good, what is evil? Well, good is God, and God is righteous, and he is the source of all good in this world, and there wouldn't be good without him. And evil is simply just distance from God. If you want to imagine a symbol for this, it's light. If you turn on a light, there is no darkness in a room. But without the light, with the absence of light, there is only darkness. Darkness itself is not a thing. Only light exists, and varying degrees of distance from the light, which equates to darkness. Do you understand? You can't generate darkness. There is only darkness in the absence of light. You can generate goodness and light, and there has to be a source for that. And that source is the creator of all things. So our version of morality is flawed because we base it on systems and structures and rules written in books created by men, and then we abdicate our choices and our burdens of morality to their rules, and so we don't have to think about it. But if you take back the power and authority to be a true child of God and enter into his kingdom, then you have responsibility. And some people don't want that. They don't want to have the burden of morality on them. But we chose that when we chose to partake in the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. And to be like God and to have that understanding of good and evil means we have to be clever with it. We have to understand it. We have to integrate it. We have to know how to walk righteously in the earth. And we have to reject darkness wherever it is and be a light in the world to eradicate darkness from it. And there is this whole thing going on, you know, Connor from the Cult of Con, he's starting his own little revivalist Christianity kingdom movement, and he has this phrase which I really enjoy. Like, Christianity will be imposed, and we will make your life better, and you will enjoy it. Whether you want to or not, we will make your life better. And I like that. I think that idea is fantastic. But I'm not here to impose anything on you right now. I just want to give some thoughts on good and evil, because these are the things I'm thinking about all the time, just like you're thinking about these things all the time. And, you know, is my reasoning perfect? Maybe not. I'm not saying, you know, what do I know? Who am I? You know, I'm not God. Like, I wasn't there when the foundations of the earth were laid. I was not there to see or understand the intricacies of creation. But I do know I am a fallen sinner, and that I am only redeemed through the sacrifice of Christ. And without him, I would probably get what I deserve, whether I like it or not. So that's me. That's my thoughts on that, guys. Thanks for listening. And as always, God bless.
I want you to get together.